If everyone, if you'd like to turn in, we're back in the book of Psalms tonight. So if you'd turn in your Bibles to, we're going to be in three different Psalms, just parts of each one of these Psalms, Psalm 3, 4, and 5. These are the first Psalms of David we have in that book. And I'm going to read to you the pertinent versions of those three psalms, that at least that we're going to discuss tonight, or I want us to take note of. And I'm going to read them to you in at least two different versions, okay? And I'll read one version and then say, or. That means we're in the other version. All right, Psalm 3, and we're going to begin in verse 5. I lay down and slept. I awoke. The Lord sustains me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people who have set themselves against me around about. Arise, O Lord, save me. O my God, for thou hast smitten mine enemies on the cheek, and thou hast shattered the teeth of the wicked. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Thy blessing upon thy people. Or, I laid me down to sleep and slept. I awaked, for Yahweh sustaineth me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people who have set themselves against me around about. Now, Psalm 4. By the way, the psalm we just read is a morning psalm. We're going to be talking about that here in a minute. It's a morning prayer. Psalm 4, an evening prayer. Tremble, do not sin, meditate in your heart upon your bed, and be still. Offer the sacrifices of righteousness, trust in the Lord. I'm skipping down to verse 8 here. In peace I will both lie down and sleep, for thou alone, O Lord, dost make me to dwell in safety. Or, be angry, yet sin not. Commune with your heart upon your bed, and be still. We'll skip down to verse 8. In peace I will lay down and forthwith sleep. That's an old version there, forthwith. When's the last time any of y'all said forthwith? You said it yesterday?
Not this year.
Not this year. I've said it once or twice already. And forthwith I will lay down, I will sleep. For thou, O Lord, Yahweh, in seclusion or only makest me to dwell in safety. Psalm 5, another evening prayer. It's an evening prayer for protection. In the morning, O Lord, thou wilt hear my voice. In the morning I will order my prayer to thee and eagerly watch. Or, Lord, in the morning you hear my voice, and in the morning lay it before you and wait. Or, I got three versions here. O Yahweh, in the morning thou shalt hear my voice. In the morning I will prepare an offering for thee and look forth. They're all a little different. Now, this evening I'd like to return to the Psalms of David. And you'll remember we were considering them in light of what they reveal to us about our God. But in returning the Psalms, at this point I think we need to change our emphasis a bit to see what they tell us about this fellow David, who plays such a prominent role in the history of the Hebrew people. I do not think I would be exaggerating to say that David has a pivotal role. Pivotal in both the Old and the New Testaments. When blind Bartimaeus in the New Testament era cried out to Jesus of Nazareth that he might be healed of his blindness, Jesus accepted this title Bartimaeus gave him, Son of David. Listen to what Bartimaeus said as it's recorded in the Gospel of Luke. This is Luke chapter 18. And it came about that as he was approaching Jericho, that is Jesus, a certain blind man was sitting by the road begging. Now, hearing a multitude going by, he began to inquire what this might be. And they told him that Jesus of Nazareth was passing by. And he called out, saying, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And those who led the way were sternly telling him to be quiet. But he kept crying all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus stopped and commanded that he be brought to him. And when he had come near, he questioned him, "What do you want me to do for you?" And he said, "Lord, I want to regain my sight." And Jesus said to him, "Receive your sight, for your faith has made you well." And immediately he regained his sight and began following him, glorifying God. And when all the people saw it, they gave praise to God. Now, it may be that we, in the future, look at this title, Son of David, and what it might mean. If Jesus is said to be the Son of David, this, at the very least, would give us some incentive to look carefully at David's life. If I took up the name Adam Smith, wouldn't you want to know who Adam Smith was? Or people started calling me, you know, Jeff App, Adam Smith guy. Would you want to know about Adam Smith? Our Lord, the Son of David, he's worth a look at. I actually marvel at David's life and how much he plays a part in our faith. In fact, I think if you just read his words and you just number the words that reference David, I think somehow his life way outstrips the pure number of words and passages that refer to him. He was an amazing soul. So I think he's worth a careful look into his life. What kind of man was David? What can we learn from the study of David's life as we see them in the book of Psalms? So to put it bluntly, let's look at the piety of David. I don't like the word piety much, but it's okay. It's a good word. To put it in another way, how did David's faith express itself every day, day in and day out? And so that's what we're going to be looking for the next few weeks, and especially tonight with Psalm 3, 4, and 5. So let's look tonight, begin looking at David's life tonight by looking at his prayer life. Now, that's a huge subject, but let's just begin with these three psalms. In each of the psalms, praying comes to the forefront, specifically as morning and evening prayers. It's very common for commentators and scholars to refer to them as the morning and evening prayers. Psalm 3 could be titled a morning prayer in trust to God. Look at the New American Standard. Is that what it says, D? Psalm 4, an evening prayer of trust to God. Is that what that says? Steve's giving me a thumbs up. That's an emoji if you're talking on. Anyway. And then Psalm 5, we're going to depart from the New American Standard, but that is an evening prayer for protection. So let's look at these three psalms. In Psalm 3 is really a retrospective glance at David's prayer the night before. David is in immense trouble. Old Hebrew copies of Scripture say that Psalm 3 was written as David fled from his son Absalom. David was elderly at this point. He had wandered from God's path and was suffering under discipline from God because of his sin with Bathsheba. Absalom was trying to usurp the throne, possibly even to kill David. Jerusalem had basically risen up against David, and he had to flee the city. That's unimaginable. David? Oh, Lord, how my adversaries have increased. Many are rising up against me. Many are saying of my soul, there is no deliverance for God from God and for him. In truth, David was suffering God's discipline. But this is important to note. David was yet under God's gracious care. And I'd like to stop right there. Did you know God could be disciplining you and just love you and his grace just be all on you at the same time? That's good to know. In verse 5, in the midst of all these troubles, David lies down to sleep and makes the confession the following morning. The Lord sustains me. Verse 6. Psalm 3 in many ways is an account of both an evening and a morning prayer. David speaks of his foes in verse 1. And yet, as he lies down to sleep, he wakes. He wakes up and he says, the Lord has supported me in the night. You see that? Here's a basic principle. End your night with prayer, and you may very well find the following morning that you're still in trouble, but you have a confidence in your heart that God is with you to face it. You can almost put it like this. End your day in prayer, and things will look better in the morning. That's kind of a secular way to look at it, but it's not a secular way to look at it. Often people say, you know, just wake, you know, go to sleep, and it'll be better in the morning. That's a secular way of putting it. End your life in prayer, and you will find in the morning things will look better to you. You'll be able to begin your prayer with faith. And you'll say, salvation belongs to God. Thy blessing be upon thy people. As Psalm 3, verse 8 ends. Now, in Psalm 4, it's an evening prayer, and it begins with a cry for help. But soon, right after that cry for help in Psalm 4, David is exhorting his own soul, tremble and do not sin. Meditate in your heart upon your bed and be still. That's in verse 4. Now, this verse it's odd what you find quoted of David in the Bible. We'll just stop. Now, if you're looking at a reference Bible, you're cheating. Who quotes this verse? Now, y'all looking at your reference Bible. Paul the Apostle. He says in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 26, be angry, but do not sin. Of all the things for Paul to quote, isn't that an amazing thing? This psalm. One commentator translated the word tremble for the word angry. Another one translates it words quake in your bed. It's as if the world is slipping out from under us or out from under David, and he's in danger of reacting in the wrong way, i.e. sinning. Did y'all know we had an earthquake in Nacogdoches County this last week? Everybody knew that? Good, Carolyn, I didn't know either. Over by Lake Nacogdoches. Abigail isn't here, but they have earthquakes are common in New Zealand where she went to school. In America, you have fire drills, and in New Zealand, they have earthquake drills. And the world shifts under your feet. Now, that's disconcerting. You can quake in your bed and tremble, but do not sin. But it's often when we're in the most danger of sinning, it was when the world seems absolutely out of our control. I look over here at my wife, and I'm just going to confess to you, she would tell you this. I'm at my worst when I'm frightened. That's when I'm at my worst. When I think, oh no, oh no, 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 no. That can't be. That shouldn't be. Why is that happening? I'm at my very worst right there. That's when the world is quaking for Jeff Apt and trembling. Do not sin. We feel that the earth is moving and shifting in the dark hours, those dark hours, that's when we need to take note. In many ways, these two psalms speak of the dangers of the night hours, both Psalm 4 and Psalm 3, when things look their worst. We must make every effort to pull sharply on the reins of our heart during times of trouble. Paul goes on to say in Ephesians, do not give the devil an opportunity. The evil and fears of our hearts often run away with us. We must give our hearts the strongest pull, a mighty pull on the reins, lest we give the enemy a foothold in our life. Verse 8 of this psalm, Psalm 4, the confidence David will eventually come to in the dark hours is, in peace I will both lie down and sleep. Thou alone, O Lord, dost make me to dwell in safety. Now, David comes to this, but this is a matter of prayer. We cannot make ourselves have confidence. We either do or we don't. You may say, well, I could say I will be confident. That's just words. Real confidence is a matter of coming to God in prayer and God doing something in us. And if it's just a matter of the will, then it's human. I've had all the human I could stand. We do not merely throw some kind of switch in our heart to turn off sin's influences. We are not a binary system like a computer of zeros and ones. It's when we deal with God that the glory is upon us. This evening prayer in Psalm 4 is not some placid prayer like a religious Hallmark card uttered on a mountaintop with the sun going down in all of its glory. The prayer is one uttered in distress. Look at verse 1 of Psalm 4. What's it say? Billy's going to tell us.
Answer me
what?
When I call.
Yeah?
O God of my righteousness, thou dost relieve me in my distress.
There you go. Thou dost relieve me in my distress. He was in distress. It is when our hearts and those around us say, "Who will show us any good?" That's when we can say to our heart, in the midst of that, God can work it in us that we can say in our hearts, "I will lie down and sleep. For thou, O Lord, dost make me to dwell in safety." Now, this bit about God being involved in our lives, and it's all important. One of the things that, I'm going to confess to you here, some of you here won't like, I don't know what you'll like or won't like. I came from the charismatic movement. My mother was pure, unadulterated nut. She believed in miracles. And a lot, when I say she was a nut, I'm just talking about the unbelieving Christianity world. They thought she was a crazy nut. But people came to her door and said, "Pray for me, Billy Jane. I need help." And as my Christian life proceeded, I look back on it and I'm thinking, what did I value back then? What did I value in Christianity? I valued in Christianity, the Christianity of worship, the people of God. What did I value in them? I valued in them that they expected God to be alive in the congregation. I tell you what, that's the first thing I noted about Mrs. Dotson. God didn't just go off and stop doing miracles for Mrs. Dotson. And I said, "Okay, I'm going to come back here." So when David comes to God and he finally comes through in his prayer life, in verse 8, and he both lies down and sleeps, he has a confidence, "For thou alone dost make me to dwell in safety." He has come to a different place. He didn't confess himself there. If he got himself to that place on his own, well, it worries me. "Thou alone, O Lord, dost make us to dwell in safety." Verse 8. Okay, Psalm 5. In Psalm 5, the poet David is likely praying in the evening about the next morning. I think it says in New American Standard, "In the morning thou wilt hear my voice. In the morning I will order my prayer to thee and eagerly watch." Isn't that right? Some versions say, "In the morning thou wilt hear my voice. In the morning I will prepare an offering for thee and look forth or watch." Now here I could reference Abraham. Remember in Genesis when he prepared the sacrifice and then stood watching and driving away the birds of prey? You remember that? He did this until the hour darkened. Now, in the Old Testament, prayer and offering sacrifice, they just are tied together. The Old Testament tabernacle and the temple worship was punctuated by morning and evening prayers. And David delighted in this. "In the morning, I'm going to sacrifice. In the morning, I'm going to worship you." He's determined he's going to do this. Psalm 5. Now, you and I today don't offer sacrifices before God. At least animal sacrifices. That great sacrifice has been made. The Son of David has spilt his blood on our behalf. The work of redemption is finished forever. It's been done. But the New Testament authors don't completely throw aside the language of Old Testament worship. They just think, okay, well, enough of sacrifices. We won't talk about that anymore. So, let's begin. Let's take two passages from the New Testament. Let's begin with Hebrews. Through him, then, let us, this is Hebrews chapter 13, verse 15 and 16. Through him, then, let us continually offer up a sacrifice of praise to God, that is the fruit of lips that give thanks to his name. And do not neglect doing good and sharing, with such sacrifices God is pleased. Now, our worship, as the writer of Hebrews puts it, is not in the slaying of animals. Note, he says, we offer up a sacrifice of praise that is the fruit of lips that give thanks to his name. When we sing in our services, we are offering up sacrifices. And sometimes we have to chase away the birds of prey. Do any of y'all get distracted in church? Anybody? We heard about Craig this morning, and good, Craig, that's good. I bet you it's pretty easy for Craig to worry about whether some of that machinery he has over there works in the morning. Or whatever troubles that might, I mean, sometimes we must, in our day, in the midst of our, even the singing here in this place, we must chase away the birds of prey that would steal from our worship. He does this with me. Sometimes I think I'm just covered up over there. I'm tempted to tell you, with the devil, and maybe I would be honest. Sometimes I think I'm sitting over there and the devil's just pounding away at me. I remember a preacher once saying, I'm glad we can't see demons. It'd terrify us. Remember him saying that? What if we could see it right now? When we sing in our services, we often have to chase away birds of prey that would steal our worship. But oh, if we truly worship, fire falls. If we truly worship, fire falls. Note here also that the author of Hebrews says we are to continually offer up sacrifices of praise. There have been those among us, especially during times of revival, those whose hearts are aflame with God and whose words pour forth in day in and day out, morning and evening. Our hymnals are full of what Hebrews chapter 13 says. Full of it. Charles Wesley. Who wrote the most, Steve? Charles or John?
Charles.
Charles. Just poured out of him morning and evening. We put it all together. But even with us, even those of us in this room have had times when our hearts are strangely warmed and there's a fire in us. And last of all, Hebrews says, and do not neglect doing good and sharing with such sacrifices. Now, use that word in the Old Testament sense, such sacrifices. God is pleased. Now, we're in dangerous ground when we start talking about money and the sharing of our time, which is even more valuable. I have a very wicked heart. I'd rather give you my money than my time. It's a terrible thing to say. But my old nature is that. But if you share with others with such sacrifices, God is pleased. Now, we cannot demand of our fellow Christians such things. For after all, such sacrifices are to God, not to man. But there is a glory upon the human soul, a blessedness that will testify that it is more blessed to give than to receive. God just says, He blesses us when we offer these sacrifices. Now in Romans 12, this is the kicker right here. I urge you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God. I'm going to stop right there. Paul is talking about in the Old Testament context that you present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is the will of God is, that which is good, acceptable, and perfect. Did you know some sacrifices weren't good and acceptable and perfect? That's what Paul's point here is. He's wanting us to offer pure sacrifices of ourselves to God. Now, these two verses lie at the very heart of the New Testament morning and evening prayer. Paul urges the Romans. He urged them by the, listen to what he says, it's pretty strong, by the very mercies of God. He urges them. He says, listen, I urge you, brethren, by the mercy of God. He's saying, just, oh, offer yourself as a sacrifice to Him. This is your, what's it say, spiritual service of worship. Now, the only one thing you could ultimately give to God, I mean, that's truly ours, it's you. That's all, ultimately, that's all you've really got. Now, you may have a bunch of stuff on the side, but it all may be spoken for. Who knows? You may, you know. But you, ultimately, He wants us. We're talking about sacrifice here. We're talking about dying to self and all of its manifestations, giving ourselves away. The problem with the sacrifice, especially with living sacrifices, is that we often want to get off that altar. But this is the very heart of the New Testament worship. As Paul puts it, we give ourselves. We share what's dear to us, the dearest thing you have. Is you. I can't tell you what those things are and what's dear to you. I'm talking about the peripheral things of your life. You know your own heart. Give them to God. Let them go into the fire. Let them rise up into the heaven with in smoke. Be as David, be as Abraham, be as Samuel. Offer sacrifices that are good, acceptable, and perfect. Now, I kind of picked this out because I think this would be a good thing we begin our New Year's with. The priest would slit the sacrifice's throat. and the blood would flow out on that altar. Jesus spilt his blood on the cross. We don't do that. What we do is offer living sacrifices. Our morning and evening prayers, the prayers of the Christian offering, happen morning and evening. And you may not think that your life is important. But it's the one treasure you can give him. And it's the one treasure God truly wants. You can give him it. This and that, your time. Wear yourself out going to church. If you don't give him yourself, isn't that right? Our lives is the one treasure God would most value. We can give it to him as our eyes close and on our beds at night, and we can give it to him in the morning when we rise up. We could give it to him morning and evening.